We're so good. We already speak it. Oh my god.
We're good.
Yeah. In case you guys didn't get the reference, that is the language in Arrival. We're crushing it. I wonder if you can actually learn that the same way you can Klingon or Dothraki. Like, did they write out a whole language?
Well, I know that the logos are a written language. They did create one. So that you can learn. I don't know if you can learn the speaking version, though.
Don't know that I can make half of the noises from my mouth that they make in this film. But
I mean, it's kind of insane. But I mean, it's pretty impressive. Impressive.
I feel like the more I talk, the more I'm veering into potential spoiler territory. If you've never seen Arrival for some reason, go watch it. It's 10 years old. It's very good. But before we get into that, I think the one thing that isn't a major spoiler is there are aliens in this. Alien visitors
indeed.
To Earth. And I was wondering, Mackenzie, where do you stand on aliens? Do you believe that there is life out there? Do you think we'll ever come into contact with them? Do you think we've already been in contact with them? Wherever you want to spin off of that.
I'm pro-alien. I think there are deaf aliens. I mean, I think it would be just one of the most extreme levels and representations of hubris to assume that, like, just us. They just picked us. We're the only thing in all of creation that is sentient, that is, you know, intelligent. I think that's ridiculous. So I don't know that there's any solid proof that we've encountered it. I mean, that I'm aware of. Not that there's not, but that I'm aware of. I think the aliens probably don't want to talk to us. You know what I'm saying? We're kind of the worst, right? Like, if you watch any news, I think it makes it super clear that we kind of suck and we've got a lot to learn. And so, I mean, if I'm them, I wouldn't talk to us either. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like when we covered, it wasn't Interstellar. That doesn't quite make sense. I feel like we did another alien movie where, as a plot point in that, they address the fact that if aliens reach us first, we're fucked, because that means that they have better technology than us. Like, they're smarter than us, and they can get a pretty quick read on humanity as a concept, and probably would not be huge fans. But I'm with you. I think the odds in this vast universe of there not being life out there other than Earth doesn't make a shit ton of sense. I feel like there has to be something out there. All that stuff came out during COVID, where like all the like past studies from Area 51 and all that actually was released. And it just, because we
that
were in
like,
a worldwide
yeah, we
crisis,
def saw some yeah. aliens, but yeah. you know, whatever. I hope you guys don't care now.
Yeah, it flew so under the radar. I didn't even give it the time of day to go and research it, but I'm pretty sure it was confirmed that something has gone down in the past.
I read the like initial reporting, which was still pretty vague, like you know it was definitely like we've had an encounter with something we didn't understand, you know, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And that's why we locked it down. But you're right, it seems like it just kind of vanished, and I think it was because the world, like to your point, was so fucking insane that we were all like, cool, like we can't deal with this right now. If I'm being honest with you, can't process this information.
Now
like
you give us this? Yeah.
Yeah, like cool, check. I'll come back to that later. And then the world kept being insane.
Yeah.
And so we never went back to it later. Yeah. I agree. Now I want to go research that and take my mind off of what is actually happening.
Facts. To your earlier point, I feel like aliens, if they have come and like taken a good look, they were probably just like, nah, we're good. We don't need this kind of,
yeah,
we don't want the smoke with humanity. They're going to kill themselves in like 300 years anyway. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get far enough like Star Trek into the galaxy to discover life on our own unless we make some massive changes. But yeah.
I think maybe what it is the 2020 discovery is that they did come. They took a look around and were like, we're getting the fuck out. Like, unsubscribe. We're leaving. This place sucks.
Oh, goodness.
Well, all right. Well, let's talk about what it might be like if we met some aliens.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are rounding out FanJan with one that we have teased, we've talked about, we've fangirled about without actually talking about. And I'm very excited to discuss Arrival.
This was the number, I think, out of all the FanJan suggestions we got, this was the one you wanted to do the most. Not even the 16 we narrowed it down to in the vote. I just feel like this was at the top of your list from all 50 we originally had.
Just period. Yeah, it was like the first thing that popped into my head because I was, you know, because I know even like one of our friends, Chris, and we had talked about it both, I think, on the pod and in real life about how we should cover it at some point. I've talked to people in person who are like, I can't believe you haven't talked about it. And then I just remember the experience of watching this the first time and being like, this is an incredible film. It's an intellectual film, which we know is one, you know, some of my favorites in terms of genres. And it just makes you think about so many things, you know, and it's not just nerdy. It's very, again, like heartfelt and it kind of like Interstellar in that way, as you mentioned a little bit earlier. So I just, yeah, I was very, very excited and I was going to battle, no pun intended, all you fuckers who tried to make me watch Battlefield Earth instead.
You were so close, guys. Maybe next year.
I'm glad we came out on top is all I'm saying.
You said it's not only smart, but it is very smart. This movie's like a linguistics major's wet dream. I love the way that they, without spoiling anything, that they explain language and kind of dumb down the basics of how you study and learn language and just the core concepts of it. It is fun to watch in that, where it feels like you're taking linguistics for dummies in some cases.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like on this watch, I had a really fun time because it actually took me maybe 4 hours to watch it because I kept stopping and doing research. I know that's not typically how I watch a movie, but I just was like having such a good time nerding out on it. So I thought it was really cool in that way to do kind of a deep dive. But one of the other big themes, of course, is time. And again, we're not going to give anything away. But that brings me to what are we drinking today? I mean, we're not drinking. But anyway,
we know it's called We Drink and We Watch Things. I am nursing a coffee. I think you're doing tea today, right?
Tea. I'm dying.
Yeah, we are both doing dry January. We are both slightly under the weather, which I feel like we've been saying since the beginning of December. We've just been
because
like,
cedar won't go the fuck away. Yeah, like it's the cedar. Austin. It's trying to kill me, to be honest. And right. The fact that I have a voice right now is incredible. I've been drinking tea all morning to get to this moment that I can talk.
Yeah, both of us yesterday were just like, hey, we need to push because neither of us have voices. So, but we're here, guys. We are here. And all that to
never
say.
Never missed a week.
We are drinking from @craftworld. Go follow him on Instagram. This is called Out of Time. And he says it's kind of like a tequila old fashioned. So it's 2 ounces of tequila, half an ounce of dry vermouth, 0.25 ounces of maraschino liqueur, 0.25 ounces of ginger liqueur, and half a teaspoon of agave. If you shake it and double strain it, you'll get a nice little cloudy effect in there, which kind of suits this movie really well. Otherwise, you can just stir it like an old fashioned on a big rock. Still get a little bit of clouds there. So again, Out of Time, just because we're drinking it doesn't mean you guys can't go make it. It's probably delicious. It sounds delicious.
It does. I can't wait to actually try it when
I'm going
to
go back and make all of these.
We'll
in
make
February.
It. We'll come back with a review, you know. Anyway, cheers with my mug.
With
I'm manifesting, if you couldn't tell. I was like, I need my powerful mug today.
I'm doing Game of Thrones, but it's the Greyjoys. Who don't get a lot of love in the TV show, but in the books, they're fucking awesome. They're like the pirates of Westeros. Anyway.
I like a pirate. I'm here for a pirate. Yeah. He's just not that likable. You know what I mean?
No, in the show, they kind of did them a disservice. They're undersold.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, we digress. Okay, so let's knock out some basics and then we'll get into the really good stuff. I will say again, this is 10 years old. If you haven't seen it, like, just pause. Go watch it. Come back later. I don't recommend sticking around if you haven't watched it because it's so fucking good and you need to. So anyways, 2016, 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 94% from critics. And I was like, thank you. Finally doing it right. 83% from audiences, which I still think is really good. But I would love to like dig into why would
if you went in expecting, if you all you knew was, oh, it's an alien invasion movie, you probably wouldn't like this. It is much more of a think piece than anything.
Yeah, like maybe they were expecting an action, like an action invasion. That's totally fair. Yeah, I don't remember what I thought it was going to be. So I wasn't really disappointed, but that's a great call out. Okay, so our director here, Denis Villeneuve, I can never, I'm sorry. I did listen to it again. I still don't think I'm doing it right. I apologize. Yeah, but anyway, he's
for those
brilliant.
Of you that don't know, yeah, we did Sicario 3 weeks ago yes. as another fan jam. So we've done two of his films in a row. My biggest regret this month with doing these two is those of you that have been with us from the beginning know that in November, we tend to do directors and we always do a yeah. spin on the name. So we did Tarantino-vember. We did Novemberg for Spielberg, and yep. I sent Mackenzie at one point like 8 other suggestions, and yep. one of them was Villanovember, and I was, and now I don't think we're gonna do it because we're already doing 2 early in the year, so that, yeah. that play on words is never gonna happen.
We're not. Well, honestly, we would probably die trying to say it every week if we're being honest. Like it would get hard. But
at least I progressed from calling him Denis Villanueva. That's how I said it a month ago until you corrected me. So he's probably happy about that. He's like, at least this ignorant American is trying the French.
They're getting better. Canada. Yeah, they're getting better. Not great, but better. So, anyways, maybe by the time we cover his entire. IMDb profile, we will have gotten it down. But speaking of, he's done obviously several things that we've talked about and mentioned before, but quick recap: Dunes, the reboots, Blade Runner 2049 edition, Prisoners, etc. So like lots more, mm-hmm. but he does what I like about that, just encapsulating that is, you know, he just has such range. I mean, I think like he has some hallmarks of his style at this point, mm-hmm. but I think he covers, you know, a pretty solid range of storytelling. There's definitely some more sci-fi in there, but I think types of stories that he's telling is pretty cool. So
yeah, he's got a feel to his, I was going to call it out when we get into the movie, but those vast, like wide shots of the scenery that we talked about in Sicario. Mm-hmm. And we did do the first Dune. Like just, he has this yeah. like vision. It's almost like Nolan-esque of the way that he uses the whole screen for some of these like huge yeah. shots. There's one we'll get to later that I think is beautiful in this.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll get to it in just a second, but I wanted to call out the cinematography for this one and who he's worked with before. So we'll get there. But who wrote this material is a couple folks, not as complicated as sometimes happens, bless. But we have Eric Heisserer, who did the screenplay, and he's done mostly TV that I saw. And I think the thing that things that people will recognize are Bird Box, which was mm-hmm. like a phenomenon for a hot minute. And then Shadow and Bone, which I only saw the first season of, and then I opted out. Not because I didn't like it, but because I got spoilers, and I was like, I don't want to watch that happen. So,
yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've seen Bird Box, and tying into that, what I thought was interesting was the writer here has done a ton of horror. Like in the late aughts, he was doing, mm-hmm. he did Final Destination 5, which you're probably not a huge Final Destination fan, but
I mean, probably I've seen the second a lot best of them, one. Shockingly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably the second best one considered by fans. He did the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, which was kind of reviled, but then he did the 2011 Thing remake / prequel / sequel kind of. Yeah. So he's done a ton of horror. And in this, there are definitely some unsettling elements to it, but it doesn't feel like a horror yeah. movie, but I think he taps into that a little bit here.
Yeah, I think he's just a strong writer. And I mean, I have some notes later. We'll talk about just the effort he put into this and what a duo they were in terms of creating this story, too. And I think, yeah, his horror and suspense skills come through here and there as well. And just the structure. But we have to give credit to the story structure, to the source material, which is Ten Chiang. He wrote a story called Story of Your Life, which this was originally called, but it didn't test well with audiences. So they changed it. And he actually approved of this adaptation. He said, not only is it just like a good film, it's a good adaptation. And he called that a miracle in Hollywood, which I tend to agree. So pretty impressive. And then, like I said, I want to call out the cinematography here. Bradford Young is a cinematographer, and I was trying to put my finger on something that felt like him because it felt familiar. And a couple of his work I've definitely seen. I don't know that I could identify what about those, you know, made me feel like this was his. But he did Selma and A Most Violent Year, which are both incredible if you haven't seen them, and Solo, which was really panned by the fans. It's really hard to do Star Wars. I think that's fair to say, but I don't think we can blame him. His cinematography was great. So anyway, he's interesting because he likes to do available light, primarily. He shoots with mostly available light, which I think is cool. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So major cast and crew. I'll try to be quick here as well. Amy Adams, we know her. We love her. We've talked about her a bunch. She plays Louise Banks, our brilliant linguist, leading the charge here. She obviously has done all kinds of things, has such range. The Fighter, Doubt, I think, was kind of her breakout. Enchanted was her, you know, really like pop culture moment, etc. So done a lot, done a lot.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw in a ton of fun facts through the cast today. The only thing, I was looking at Amy Adams as sort of our superstar here. First off, I don't know how much you want to know about Hooters culture today, Mackenzie, but did you know you can work at Hooters before you're 18? Doesn't that seem weird?
Yeah, because it's just you get a TABC license and you can be a server and that's it. Well, not TABC everywhere, but you know what I mean. Serving license and you just go. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, so to tie that in here, apparently Amy Adams, one of her first jobs was working at a Hooters. And then as soon as, like the day she turned 18, they were like, okay, now you got to start wearing this outfit. And she quit on the spot. So good for you, Amy. And kids out there, it's
good
never too late for a career
you.
Change.
Yeah. I love that for you, Amy. Also, wow, wowzers. Yeah. Okay. Jeremy Renner, who again, I think we've talked about before, plays Ian Donnelly, the resident nerd, which is kind of a funny role for him. And I sort of forgot, you know, how that was going to play out when I first saw him. Cause we've had our expectations about Jeremy Renner reset in all kinds of other things, such as The Hurt Locker, The Town. Wind River is maybe the closest cross function between the two, you know, this and that. But he does a great job. I just remember
more range than people give him credit. Now that I'm thinking about, you just listed him. I'm like, he does have range, and he's very likable, nerdy in this. He's very like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, like a dork, but super charismatic. Yeah,
for sure. He sells it. I just remember like it started and I was like, oh yeah, it's, you know, yeah, he's being a nerd. I sort of forgot about that. It's cute. Forrest Whitaker, who plays Colonel Weber with arguably one of the most distracting attempts at a New England accent you've ever heard. He has done The Last King of Scotland and ironically Battlefield at Earth, which I felt the need to point out. So I was like, really? Really? Okay. Bless. All right. Michael Stuhlbarg, who plays Agent Halpern, he's kind of a bad guy in this one. Not like a bad, bad guy, but like a light bad
guy.
He's
the government man. Yeah.
He's the government man. But fun fact, I was like, I'm not buying it because I saw him in New York City last time I was there. I am not the kind of person to walk up to a celebrity. I think that's invasive and weird and rude. However, other people were talking to him as I was walking by, and they were being, of course, complimentary and kind and all of that. But he had just walked out of the building and was like assaulted by these people. Right. And this is in Midtown. He's probably walking out of rehearsal, that kind of thing. And he was just so kind. I just noticed it. It was like I saw it happen in real time. He was like assaulted by these people and he just immediately was so gracious and kind and welcome. So anyway, I don't buy him as a bad guy. He seems like one of the nicest guys in Hollywood and he just can play anything also. Yeah.
Very talented. Did you watch Boardwalk Empire back in the day?
I did not. I kind of I didn't have, I think it was like that. I didn't have cable, whatever channel it was on. You know what I mean? I didn't have that at the time. And so I just never made it back. So
that's where
was
I discovered
it
him.
Did we love it?
I felt like him and Michael Shannon were going to be the two breakouts from Boardwalk Empire because they both, and Michael Shannon, I think, has seen more career success, but Stuhlbarg's done pretty well for himself, but definitely worth watching. He plays Arnold Rothstein, like a true life, like guy that got into gambling and like illegal betting and things like that back in the 30s.
He's just such a character actor who can play anyone in any application with such depth and with, you know, such conviction. And he's big on the stage as well. He has a lot of stage experience. So like he was in a play at the time when I ran into him. I don't remember what play it was, but he's great. Such range.
Like big Philip Seymour Hoffman energy, I feel like.
He does actually. I could see that. Yeah. Good overlap. So then we have Mark O'Brien, who plays Captain Marks, and he did Ready or Not that we talked about. I sort of forgot about that, but
I knew I recognized him when I was rewatching this. And I was like, where do I know him from? And it's the first thing in his IMDb.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't put my finger on it either, but he does a good job. And then last one I wanted to mention, just it's a kind of critical to the plot. C. Ma plays General Shang. You would probably know him from Mulan, voicing in Mulan, or not voicing, rather, in Mulan, the remake. And then he does Dante's Peak.
I mean, he's still technically voicing himself. You just see his
That's
real
true.
Face.
Yeah. That's true. He's just there in real life as well. Absolutely. Dante's Peak was like a big thing in the 90s, but I never saw it. Did you Same. Ever see it?
That's yeah. Is that a climbing movie or a volcano movie? Or is it That's neither? Great. Is it just called
I literally
Dante's
have no
Peak?
Idea. I mean, I just saw the cover. I don't even know. I feel like I am ill-prepared for that question.
I feel like that was one of those movies we've talked about where they go hand in. Like, I feel like there's a movie called Volcano, and I thought Dante's Peak was the other one, like the volcano movie that came out at the same time, but there's somebody out there rolling their eyes right now. Like, I can't believe you haven't seen Dante's Peak.
You did great. It's about a okay. volcanologist, Harry Dalton, who does a thing and, okay. you know, tries to prevent a volcano from blowing up. I don't know. I didn't read the rest. But you were right. You're on the money. Whew. We did it. We're doing great, guys. Okay. Quick plot summary, and then we're going to roll on. So linguist Louise Banks leads a team of investigators when gigantic spaceships touch down around the world. As nations teeter on the verge of global war, Banks and her crew must find a way to communicate with the extraterrestrial visitors. Thorough, clear, accurate.
And it's the most, maybe this might not be the first time this has ever been done, but I wrote down, I like that. This might be the first alien invasion movie where the goal is to prevent war. Like, typically alien invasion movies, you just assume yeah. there's going to be a war and, like, it's an action film. I love that this takes the premise of, like, what if they just showed up and we were trying to figure out what the hell they wanted as opposed to immediately being shot at, you know?
What if we were relatively reasonable yeah. in our approach to...
Relatively is the important word.
Right, it is yeah. it is important. But yes, I think it makes a difference here. You're absolutely right. So, all right, kids, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
Can I ask you okay. a question off the bat here? Because I didn't yep, want to interrupt good. The cast and crew. Only yeah. Best Picture nom of this year where there were did not also receive any acting noms. Do you think that's justified? Not in comparison to the other people that were nominated, but do you feel that any of the performances in this merited a nomination?
That's a great question.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm going to pause and I'm going to think through that for a quick second. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I put a note in my notes. I actually made a comment about Amy Adams and what an excellent actress I think she is. And one of the things that stood out to me was she carries this sadness when we first meet her. Like you feel it immediately. There is a heaviness to her, but it's subtle. You know, mm-hmm. she's productive. She's doing her job. Not only doing her job, she's obviously one of the best in the world at her job. And she's brilliant and she's, you know, beautiful and all these things that would make you think this person could and should be happy, content, whatever. And I think what is interesting about the usage of time in this is that you misunderstand at first when and where right. and why, right? Mm-hmm. But when I think about it, about when you encounter that, I thought about it again later in the movie. And I thought that also makes sense for the character that you, because you are out of time, because this thing that maybe you don't fully understand in a linear way, but you understand in your bones, you would carry that always, regardless of when it happened. And I think, I don't know, but I think that was a choice. And I think it was a really subtle nuanced and well executed choice on her part that you could easily explain away as like, you know, well, she didn't know, or she's just playing a sad character, whatever. I thought it was really well done. So I don't know. I think if you really think through her choices that she made as an actress in this role, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, not knowing who else was nominated, I think, yeah, she could totally, totally earn a nom for this.
Agree with that. I think she's the one that I keyed in on. I think Renner's great, but I don't think it's necessarily nomination worthy or nominee worthy. With hers, mm-hmm. I think it's not that she's not doing a great job. It's just what she's given to work with maybe isn't as loud as some other performances might have been that yeah. year or attention grabbing because it is such a reserved character, to use that word. Yep. She gets a couple moments of really high emotion and like these more drawn out and sort of like yep. big moments, but she doesn't get enough of that to kind of push it over that edge. Most of the character is very observational and soft, not soft spoken, but just like very logical yeah. and thought through. So I guess I get that.
I agree. I think a lot of her, but I think to your point, it's quiet brilliance though, you know, like yeah. you're getting a lot of physical acting from her that is small, right? Like, I noticed like facial reactions and physicality of like shaking at specific moments and just the way that she moved as this person. And I think it was, you're right, like a quiet performance, but a brilliant one. And if I one that pops to mind to be as being an Oscar worthy quiet performance was like, think about Meryl Streep and Sophie's Choice. Like that is a very quiet, powerful performance, and was obviously worthy of that. But I agree with you. It's not a big flash bang performance that would maybe call attention to itself, perhaps.
Think about Ryan Gosling in Drive. He won like 18 Oscars for that, and he didn't say a fucking word. Anyway, okay. So getting into the film itself, I just wanted to start there really quick, but
I have so many thoughts.
I know. So, I have a million thoughts and I'm trying to figure out where to start.
I think you have to talk. I mean, we have so many, like a high level, we got to talk about the language. We got to talk about like how they interact with these people, right? Like, or with the globally interact with both the aliens and the people.
Yeah.
We have to talk about time. You have to talk about, you know, what she's battling with in terms of choices. Like, and then just the nerd stuff. Like, I just feel like there's so many things. It's going to be so hard to keep this tight, you guys.
Can I start with a very, not hot take, but lukewarm take?
Yeah, give me a lukewarm take. I love one.
I liked this much better on first watch. I did not have as good of a time. It's not saying the movie is bad. I'm still going to rate it very highly. It's a lot of things. It is unique. It's original. It's well performed. The visuals are incredible. I don't know if I'll ever watch this again because I found myself having a much easier time during this than normal, taking notes, looking stuff up, just because of the pacing. The first half is like, the first 15 minutes are balls to the wall. It's like, guess what? There's aliens. Hey, you've been hired. Let's go talk to the aliens. Okay, now we're talking to the aliens. And then it sort of goes into a very like clever middle portrayal of like them bridging this gap and then sort of the global tensions that are taking place. And then it goes again back to balls to the wall for the last 20 minutes or so. But that middle part was a little harder for me to get through this time. Not to say it wasn't a good rewatch, but I feel like I might give it, you know, 10 years if I watch this again.
I hear you. I think that is a piping hot take, not a lukewarm one. However, I hear you. And I also think, I mean, to be fair, just an observation about you, what I've learned is like you have a real, I would say, awareness of pacing.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe arguably like a sensitivity to pacing in terms of like, if it's not going fast enough, I'm going to check out, which I totally get. I think a lot of people do that. For me to notice pacing and like length of a film, it's gotta really fucking drag and it's gotta be really, really long. Like I have a lot of patience for a long and slow film, I think, on the whole. So maybe that's why I didn't like register that kind of low middle or slow paced middle, you know?
We definitely differ on our preferences there. I will say the part that was more interesting, this was only the second time I've watched this. The part that was more interesting to follow was what you were mentioning before, if you want to get into the time component of how we think they're flashbacks of the daughter and how that eventually circles around. It's more fun to like track that throughout of what actually is taking place and to see her coming to the realization of like, what the hell are these memories I'm feeling halfway through the movie? And then we get the big delivery at the end. So that was better the second time around when I knew what was happening.
And I think like, again, it has been a long time since I saw this. I think I saw it right when it came out, a short while later when it came out on Blu-ray when I bought it, and I don't think I've seen it since. So yeah, roughly 10 years since I've watched it. And I think the cool thing about it was that I did know about the timeline thing, but I didn't remember exactly how it worked, right? So I think that's part of why it was still a compelling watch to me, because you're kind of still looking for the clues and trying to understand where all of this falls exactly. Mm-hmm. But I do think, again, going back to the source material, the story, I think it does a really brilliant job of that structure and tying the events of this vignette, as it were, this moment in time of this alien invasion, quote unquote, to time and how memory works and the way it's delivered, I think is relatively brilliant in terms of story. And I think in the screenplay, it's just written very well. And You know, you think, like you said, that you're watching this woman grieve this past loss, and she doesn't even know who this is yet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think I like how that ties into the performance of, you know, you're seeing Amy like get these flashes and she's having these headaches. And even at various moments, again, probably on first watch, you would think, well, it's because she's having bad memories.
Right.
And instead it's because she's confused. She doesn't understand what she's seeing. And I think what I love about that and what that tells us about her character is that she's kind of accepting it as a part of the process of learning this language. She's not closed off to it, I guess is what I'm saying. And she's not dismissing it as just nightmares, right? She's going like, she really believes as a linguist in that idea of language can rewire your brain and change the way you see the world and understand things. And she's saying that in very simple terms to the people around her, but she's practicing it in the way that she's ingesting what is happening to her, not only the interactions with them, but outside of those interactions.
Yeah, the use of language in this and how that language, like learning their language, ties into this capacity for completely understanding time in a different way. I love how the little things she notices of the physical, like the ink, for lack of a better word, that the right. aliens are using is one message, but then they also communicate verbally, and it's like, not the same yeah. thing. It's different. Like they're communicating two things at the same time. I liked that piece. And then I liked how it circles all back around at the end with, is Shang? Is that the Chinese leader's name?
I think it's General Shang, I think is how they say it. Yeah. Okay. They don't ever say his first name. I don't think.
Okay. Shang. But how that, I mean, that in its own right, I wanted to touch on really fast of, I love how he circles around at the end, but I love the incorporation of that character throughout, how you never really see him. He's kind like partially an antagonist, even though Michael Stuhlbarg's the
real
antagonist.
He's just on a screen, like on a newsreel, and you don't really see him. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like if you're looking at this from an American perspective, it's like, oh, like of course we're going to picture the Chinese leader as the one who's going to mess this whole thing up. Meanwhile, he's probably thinking the same thing about us. And you see the tensions there, but the fact that he's this big, bad, evil from the American lens of the characters in this movie, and you don't really seem to see him mentioned on the news. You hear about the decisions they're making. They go dark on everybody. But then when he shows up at the end and it's the first time you actually see him and he's like smiling and very polite and has this really touching conversation with her, it's like, oh, now this all makes sense. So that character is super pivotal. When I was writing my IMDb notes at the start, before I hit play, I was putting the cast down and I was like, I don't remember much about Shang and how he figures into the story. And then afterward, I was like, I need to write him down and talk about him.
Yeah. Well, but he's such a big moment. You're exactly right. I still think she's the linchpin, of course, but he this doesn't happen this way without him, right? Like this doesn't happen this way without him interacting with her in the way that he does. And I think what's really fascinating about the language piece is, you're like, Louise is the only one who identifies exactly what you're saying, which is that there's an auditory language and then there's a written language. And this is where I went down a fucking nerd rabbit hole, of course, but it's semi-sciographic is a language that conveys meaning, but it doesn't represent a sound meaning like human language does. And there's almost no human language that does this. And so it's one of the things that they pointed out when I was kind of researching this is that like there, you can miss the opportunity to have two forms of communication. And they even allude to that in the film, but we don't really have many of these types of languages. The only exception would probably be a form of hieroglyph, but Mayan hieroglyphs apparently did this early on, fun fact for you guys, but they eventually moved to becoming like logosyllabic, like Mandarin or something like that, where it's a visual, but it's a logosyllabic visual. And so I thought that was really interesting to think about the layers of communication being so different, being like what a visual could convey versus what a sound could convey and what opportunity that lends. And I think talks again about how advanced this language is, like how advanced this society, you know, this alien race is that comes to speak to us and teach us about time, you know, how we can be out of time, like you said, you know.
Yeah. The the sound of the language itself, at least the verbal part of it, just sound in this movie is really well done, which is like a staple of Denis. Just it's, you know, and I know it's not Denis making the sounds, but like the people that he hires to do all this stuff.
Right.
Just the communication, the hums, the gurgles, the clicks, the hisses. We made the joke at the start, but it actually is really interesting to hear, because I think when you first hear it, it's a little unsettling. And then as the movie goes on, you realize, oh, it's just different than what I'm used to.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway.
But I think that's what's great about her as a character. I mean, obviously, again, like this is her role. She's the linguist on the scene. You're going to hope that she's open-minded. But I think you have to be open-minded beyond just how language works, right? Like you have to be open to being open-minded about intent, mm-hmm. about what someone values. Like I think there's this really interesting connection between being open to learning this new language that is so fundamentally different than any human understanding, because you're not only learning a language, you're learning a species, and deciding that you can accept as a baseline that they might have good intent, that there might be a reason that you can identify with as a wholly different race and species. And I think that's really fascinating and critical to her character. And I think actually we get teasers of these other intellectuals globally, even though mm-hmm. they all have slightly different motivations. Those people, those scientists and those linguists and those people kind of try to lead with that same mindset. They're all knowledge sharing. They're all being the most collaborative and cooperative that you tend to see, which is very atypical of, like you said, this type of alien invasion movie.
Yeah, the call outs during that where they're, again, it dumbs it down in the easiest way with the bit about, the Chinese were using Mahjong as a means of communication with them, but mm-hmm. it's like, oh, they're teaching them a game that represents war. And like, that's how right. they're interpreting everything. And I like the
in
metaphor.
In the framework of winning. In
yeah.
the framework of, I have to win this.
Yes. And when she says after that to the colonel, like, if the only word, you know, if the only thing I teach you is hammer, everything's a nail. Like, they're putting it in these simple terms. And I really like that. And then stemming from that, you have, of course, the military doing what they always do in movies like this, which is fucking it all up. And they hear that miscommunication between tool versus weapon and offer weapon. Do they mean they want us to give them something? Or are they going to attack us? Do they want to give us something? And the military overreacts. And we get that awesome like countdown scene, which is heartbreaking to watch because you know something bad's going to happen, but that is just super tense.
Yeah, I think it speaks to, like you said, the writing, the influence of, you know, of Eric Hesserer in this, of, you know, he builds you up to this moment of tension, and you know, you can see that both she and Ian don't want to say weapon. You know, right. like he looks at her and you can tell he's kind of deferring. Like, do you want to tell them, you know, because he's what I love about him, too, is that he's learning it with her. He's as deeply committed to learning the language as her, even though it's not his specialty. But he knows it informs everything. And so I love that they become this duo that works really well together. But he also sort of defers to her of like, this may not be safe to say to them. We know that it may not be, you know, it could upend this whole thing. And I love the writing there of how that creates that tension to your point. And I love the homage to this, the building of this language, you know, of like, you know, the heptapod language is something that he and Denis built together. Like they worked with artists to build the logograms. There's like 100 logograms. It has grammar to it. It has meaning to it. They even created a book at the end of this like logogram Bible. So they were so deeply invested in telling this story so well and authentically and writing it into every aspect of it. So yeah, I love that scene and I love how representative it is of the structure of the story and the language.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on for the language for another 20 minutes or so, I'm sure. It's so inherent to just this film, and it's literally the foundation of this film's plot. But from a visual standpoint, I just wanted to give like pro tip Hollywood. When you're doing alien ships and alien designs, don't overthink it. It doesn't have to be this super elaborate Battlefield Earth looking spaceship, you know?
I love that we are roasting Battlefield Earth throughout. Just
without even having watched it this week. But just, I love that it's just this sort of like egg-shaped thing. It's got this, like the surface is sort of like solid, but also kind of has a gradient to it. The opening is just this hole at the bottom. You get that cool thing where they jump in and the gravity shifts differently.
Yep.
And then the alien reveal, I mean, it's cool. It's just they're behind this wall. There's this fog. You see them sort of like floating around in there. And then you only see, I like the reveal too of, for the most part, you only see the like tentacles, for lack of a better term, throughout. And then yeah. when she's actually in the room later, you see the full body. And you're like, oh, I've just only seen half of this thing the whole time.
Yeah, I love that you're just uncovering more as it goes throughout. And I totally agree. The production design on this is very simple, but impactful. And I agree, like he wanted the shape. They apparently decided the shape of the ship very early on, but they had to kind of invent the gravity thing to justify the shape. Like how would they work in this space, you know? And so I think it's really cool that they started from that and it ended up informing like the environment in such a unique way, and the way that they shot it. Again, shout out to the cinematography here and the framing here that they came up with of, they wanted these big, wide, impactful shots, like you said, but I think it also calls attention to those really narrow focused moments. It makes them stand out of, I have to look really closely at her or this scene or her daughter. And it just, and it zooms in and almost refuses to give you the full picture, the hospital scene, the reading to her later, you're not supposed to be able to see all these clues to the rest of this story. And I think mm-hmm. it's shot in such a great way to convey that.
Yeah, it's very deliberate that all of the communication scenes with the aliens are in this tight space where it's the goal yep. of this is communication. And you're in this when yep. they first enter, you are kind of scared for what might end up happening to them. But it turns out, no, these aliens are pretty chill. So it's very not quite claustrophobic, but it feels like a negotiation session, right? Or like diplomatic relations yeah. kind of thing. But to go backwards slightly with what I mentioned at the start, that first like sweeping grand shot of the one ship as the fog is rolling over the hill, I'm like, that is like Denny, like, and the cinematographer here at their best. If anything from this movie, that yeah. is the shot I will never forget.
It's so beautiful. And they even talked about how they wanted this to feel like you're on the bus on a rainy day, riding to school and looking out the window, just watching all this happen and the you know, the environment roll past you. And it's this gray and this cloudy and this rainy energy. And they do such a good job of doing that without like literally shadowing it, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's a real skill here. And I think that's a beautiful shot that you're talking about. I also like at the end when they fade, you know, and
yeah, the
and
way that they just sort of, that's how they travel. They just sort of dissipate.
They just, I think, fog out
again.
Just,
don't overthink, you know, it. Yeah.
They just mist away and like how chill, right? Like they don't shoot up into the, you know, the atmosphere. It's yeah. I like that. It's a great call out that they didn't overthink it. They kept it simple and visually it was still stunning.
Yeah. It reminds me the whole thing about aliens and like, don't overthink it is, there's this old YouTube sketch from John Landis's son, Max, who I think is canceled now. So no respect to him. You don't need to go watch this, but he did like a couple of YouTube skits. And one of them was about like the rules of motion pictures. And he was being given advice by his dad, and his dad sat him down when he was a kid. And he was like, how do you kill a vampire? And he's like, stake through the heart, garlic, holy water, sunlight, whatever it is. And he goes, no, you can kill a vampire however the fuck you want, because vampires don't fucking exist. So when you're a movie maker, you can do, like, you're going to do an alien movie, whatever, you can keep it as basic or whatever, as complicated as you want. It doesn't need to be this flashy thing. It can just be like, yeah, this is probably, might be squids. What do we know? You know,
giant squids.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we have to talk a little bit about how this, at the end of the day, is not, it is and it is not about the aliens, right? It's about, yes. yeah. right? Like, it is about her. And maybe that's why it's okay we don't really see them fully until the end, because it's really about like her human experience. And I think that's why the original title is like really compelling, just the story of your life. It's so simple. It's like, this is the story of her life. But I think the interesting part about that is that, you know, what we end up learning about her is that this is a choice that she made. She made the choice from this experience to move through the world in a nonlinear way and in a way that gives her all the answers, as it were, to her own life, not to the universe or anything, but to her own life. And that comes with major tragedy, as it does for everybody, right? It's not that you won't experience that as a different person. It's just now she knows.
Yeah.
And knowing it, and the concept of free will versus determinism, and deciding I'm going to make choices that change this versus I'm going to choose to accept my reality and make these decisions. I think that's just so compelling. And I was curious what you thought about that. You know, she chooses to have this child that she knows is going to die. She chooses to marry this man she knows is going to leave her, that she loves very much. She chooses to do it all anyway, you know?
Yeah, it's this isn't the first movie we've covered, not in this exact circumstance, but it's not right. The first movie we've covered where you weigh, was it worth it, kind of, you know, the good parts? Yeah. Is it worth the tragedy that's eventually going to happen? Or like an Eternal Sunshine, where it's okay, we know this probably isn't going to work out, but we know we're going to have some good times probably. Yeah. It's just that bittersweet reality of life of, are you willing to sort of take on something that's going to end in order to enjoy all the good times you're going to have prior to that? So it is a very touching and like heartfelt closing. And it's interesting that that's, the film kind of ends on this final emotional moment where she's sitting there with her soon to be husband, we assume, and asking him these questions about like, would you change anything if you could, like if you could see everything?
Yeah. I love that. And again, the subtle, quiet way she delivers that performance there is just, I think, really beautiful. And yeah, I think what's so compelling about that concept is like slightly different than Eternal Sunshine. I think what happens with her learning this language is such a different experience. It feels like something you just can't understand. You just can't conceptualize, of course, to some degree of like, for example, I don't have children. Right? You hear from everyone who has children that it changes you so fundamentally that you can't fathom it. And I believe that. Like, I respect that. I believe that. But you can't fathom it. You can't experience it until you experience it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you were conceptually told this would happen, you're going to have a child, but you're going to have this beautiful experience of having a child, but she's going to die. But you couldn't feel it. Would you then do it? And I think the difference that she gets to experience that we wouldn't just thinking about the concept of it is she can feel and remember the just deep, unfathomable joy of having had this time with her daughter. And I think that's the difference of like this exact scenario versus the concept, you know, that changes it for me. Because I feel like if you couldn't feel it, it would be a hard sell, you know? If you couldn't remember, feel the joy of those things, and it was just a concept, could you go through the pain of it?
Right. Those to my point earlier when we were talking about the performances, and that I think the flash forwards, I guess we'll call them for lack of a better term, that's where Amy Adams actually gets oddly the most time to shine, because she seems more animated and emotionally available than we see her at any other point in the movie, which is the whole point, right? Where you're thinking throughout this, oh, she's kind of reserved because she's had this terrible experience. That's not what's happening. So it's cool that by the end you get this twist, and I like the way they reveal it with like the artwork, and it's mommy and daddy talk to aliens. I think that's very cute, and it's a good way of us going, oh shit. But yeah, dude, I think that it ties everything together. Again, I didn't, as a second watch through, two was enough for me, but I still really, really enjoy this.
I think also something to point out there about those moments you saw, she's not only more animated, the whole color scheme has changed.
Oh, for sure.
Like it's brighter, it's warmer, it's even the parts that are hard, right? Like even where her husband has chosen to take some time away, there's no implication that they're divorced, but they're just not together right now. Like who knows if they even got married, whatever. They're not together right now, but she has such love for her daughter. You can see that, you can feel that, it comes through with the color and the, again, these vignettes that are very, very close up for her and them. And even at those hard parts, like I said, where he's not there. And then you get the flashbacks to where he was there and just what a stark contrast visually
The movie is the last line of the movie where he says, "Do you want to make a baby?" And she says, "Yes." Is that how the movie finishes? Yep. That's powerful.
Yep. And then it's the music, right? And she's making that choice and they're making it together. And it's really, I think we have to also take a second to talk about the music. One, the score here is incredible. There's some really beautiful music here, but the violin at that very end, at that last moment, I'm sure, you know, you don't really catch this right while you're listening to it. You just feel it. There is a palindrome, and it's said, you know, a palindrome is something that is said and spelled the same way backward and forward. We don't think about it in terms of music in the same way, but they talk about it in the movie with the name Hannah. It, I think, is a great representation of this lack of linear time, this non-linear time and experience that she's having and has had. And then you're representing it in the music as well, this other layer, and you're coming back around to her making this decision. And it seems so simple, but it seems like such a perfect ending when you get all the layers of it.
Yeah, we will talk more about this music, oddly, next week.
We sure will.
Is the lesson at the end, like when I'm trying to like understand the rules of the universe, is at the end of this film, does anybody who can learn this language get that full scope of time? Or do you think she was handpicked to be the one person who gets this ability? Because she's teaching it at like a college course. And I'm like, wait, does this mean everyone can start seeing like their life in this way, you think?
I think the implication is that if they really truly learn it and understand it the way that she did, then yes. Because again, their whole species and their whole race can do this, has this experience. But I think also the implication is that she was uniquely positioned and uniquely capable of doing it. And I think you circle back to the beginning where there's that test of the Sanskrit word for war, which is maybe one of my few complaints about this film, is I don't see how that's a very effective test for this general who doesn't know shit about shit, but whatever. I think the point that they're laying down for us is that she is very nuanced in her ability to understand linguistics and language and intent and da-da-da. So I don't think you're supposed to believe that a bunch of other people have also achieved this. Because think about Ian.
That was where my head went, was do you think that eventually he learned the language and that's how he knows what's going to happen to his daughter and that's why he gets pissed off?
No, because she tells him, remember? She says, I told daddy something he wasn't ready to hear. Mm. So I think he knows the language as well as her, you know, conceptually, right?
But he doesn't have that ability.
He hasn't experienced it in the same way as her. And I think she felt the need to tell him at some point, and that's what sort of, quote, drives him away. Not these other issues. You can tell there is this deep love for each other. I think he just has a hard time accepting the choice she made without him. And I think it's indicative that he can be intellectually aware of the language and not consume it in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. So you're welcome. I actually didn't nerd out as hard as I could have. I had so many notes.
I think there was an appropriate amount. We went pretty hard on the language. Yeah.
I reined it in a little bit. I'm just saying. Anyways, but all that to say, like you mentioned pacing, obviously, which I think is a fair call out for a lot of.
But again, the first time, if you've never seen this, I think the first time through it works fine. It was just on the rewatch where I found myself taking a lot of notes during the middle because I was like, oh, I can kind of like half tune out for this part.
Right. So all that to say, again, what would you say is your, maybe give us two, maybe give us your first time watch rating and then what it came to at this point.
I don't want to do, I feel like that's not fair to be like, oh, well, I didn't enjoy this as much the second time, so I'm going to rate it on that. I won't do that. I'll just say for whatever my Letterboxd rating of this is probably like a 4 out of 5. So probably on our scale, like an 8 would be my guess, maybe 8.5. It's pretty damn good. One thing we didn't talk about that I think is worth mentioning is Forrest Whitaker. I like his portrayal of the colonel. He manages to avoid most of the military cliches of like the predictable role just based on the screenplay that they're working with here. The only thing that rubs me the wrong way is the trope of I'll be ready in 20 minutes. He's like, we take off in 10. Just once I want somebody to be like, well, I need 20, so I guess I'm not going to be on the fucking chopper. Like, that's the only cliche that he plays into. But shout out Forrest Whitaker. I think he does a great job in this. So I'll end up saying, 8. I'm going to go 8. I don't know that I'm going to go up to an 8.5 today. What about you?
I gut checked this at like 9, 9.5. I really love this movie. Yeah. I think it's gorgeous. I think it's, like I said, I mean, for me on a second watch, it was, I guess, to be fair, I paused it a lot, like I said, but I paused it a lot to research these things, these concepts that I thought were so compelling. So I don't know if maybe I watched it through again at this point, it would feel slow, but it didn't come through that way for me. But, my complaints are a little bit around, like I said, the test at the beginning, I don't think that like makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. I love his portrayal. You're right. Forest Whitaker does such a good job, but his accent is truly distracting. Like he's trying to be like a Boston, Manchester, Maine, New England. That's like very muddled. I don't think it's great. And then I think it's not perfect by any means. So I think I like have to go shy of a 10, but I think it's great. I think it's a great experience and it's like such a great nerd film. And to your point on the first watch, I think you just can't have that same experience twice when you know everything. And it's one of these that's just a really great first watch. Yeah.
It's a movie. I used the word unique or original earlier. Like it is a one of one. I don't know any other movie that tackles this subject matter in the exact same way. Interstellar comes close with some of its concepts, but it's not anywhere close to Interstellar in the type of movie it is.
Yeah, totally different. And like you said, it's not really like an action movie.
Right.
You know, it's not taking all this and making these big gratuitous scenes of any kind. It's just a story. It's really interesting. So cool. All right, kids. Well, thanks for hanging with us while we talked through this one. This was a fun fan, Jan. I think we did a good job. It was a good month, man. Well good done, selections, y'all. Guys, other than not picking Theater Camp, which we'll have to do later. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we've told them to go watch it. So maybe if more people watch it by next year.
Yeah, there you
go. Or we just do a summer month, you know, and do a summer camp.
It feels like a summery movie. I mean, we do a summery, a vaguely summery theme here and there. So maybe it'll pop its way back. But anyways, come back next week for a whole new month where, because Lamar has shown me mercy, we are going to do Oscars month again so that I don't have to watch 1,200 movies to the 1,100 I'm going to watch. And we are kicking off with one that is taking award season by storm, Hamnet. I'm so excited to talk about this.
It was a ride.
It's a fucking doozy. So yes, I would just warn you, if you are going to go watch this before that next episode, one, bring tissues. Two, prepare to have your life changed. It's an experience.
I think this movie was the most time I've spent with my eyes welling up with tears. Like, I didn't cry until a specific part, but like, I was just really fucking sad for literally 45 to 60 minutes of this film, just in a row. My eyes were like wet. So
it's a deeply emotional film. Yeah. And I would say human. Anyway, we don't need to go down this rabbit hole, but it's so good, I think. But go watch it and be prepared is what I would say. In the meantime,
follow us on our socials. We drink and we watch things on Instagram, TikTok. You can get the video of this podcast on YouTube or Spotify video. You can always email us. We drink and we watch things pod@gmail.com. If you have specific the Oscar noms aren't out yet. I think they will be by the time this episode comes out. So if you have specific ones that you would like us to cover in February, go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, we're a few days out from them coming through. We're making some guesses at ones that we know will be nommed, and then we're going to go from there. So we will keep you posted. But yeah,
and that's not going to get a single fucking nomination. it got enough Golden Globes. It doesn't need
I
Oscars.
I will fucking riot. You know what I mean? Like, I will riot. They won't care, but I will riot. Anyways, for now, kids, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.